for them to have gone through that. So that song came from, you know, a very serious place. But it was, you know, it was a good song. It was real. It was about a real story. Yeah. We felt, you know, we were kind of about that. Like even Sol Terrar was a bit about similar types
of, you know. A song like Sol Pleureur is probably something that, you know, songs like that and La Force de Comprendre connected so much emotionally with people that now people are connected with you guys, you know, spiritually, to the point where, you know, this guy's on his way out and his family knew how much, you know, you meant to that person. And that's probably from, you know, that emotion that you guys always evoked through your music, you know. There was always a message that you guys had, and there was always, you know, something deeper than just, you know, put your hands in the air.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely, you know, our biggest songs, the longest lasting songs are the ones that came from those kinds of emotional, real places, right? But again, like, we also wanted to have some happier moments, right? And happier music, and different, touch on different things. But, you know, when you're a writer, and you're trying to write something, the things that resonate most with people are real stories, right? So those were the songs that stood out years later. Those are the ones that are still the ones people remember, and for good reason.
Yeah, man.
So that's where I use that bass. If you want to hear that bass on, I actually use it on almost all my tracks, or I did at the time, because it was, it hit all the different frequencies properly.
Who else did you have work on that album?
So on that album, like I said, I am, you know, we worked it out with them to come down and they spent a good week in Montreal hanging out with us. We, at the time, we weren't at Talk Studios, but we had rented a space in the East End that had a big empty room. It was used to be a studio and was kind of no longer being used for that. So we moved all our gear from Tox into this new space, because it had a lot more areas to kind of chill and lounge and stuff, with pool table and stuff. It was more of an environment where we could create. So we hung out there, and, you know, IM was hanging out with us a lot. Again, great guys, funny, you know, funny, cool. You know, and they were kind of like older brothers, really. Like, the vibe was like, you know, mentors. But
yeah, because they, cool, they had been in the game for like 6-7 years.
They were veterans, right? So we tried to absorb as much as we could hanging out with them. And, you know, in all things, like, at the time I had a brand new boxer, a dog, right? And like Shuriken, for example, he's got 2 Rottweilers or something. So he was giving me tips on how to train my dog, you know. Like, it was just like, on many levels we were hanging out and just chilling, you know. So it was a great experience. I mean, I remember sitting with Akhenaton for a good hour just talking about Queensbridge rappers, you know what I mean? Because they were, at that time, that was Micro d'Argent came out, and I felt for the first time a French MC kind of really hit that flow, a New Yorkish kind of flow. And I told him, like, your rhymes are really dope. And we started talking about influences. And I've always been a big Queensbridge, G-Rap, Nas, you know, Tragedy, you know, from day one, I've always been a big Queensbridge. You know, I love their style of rapping, right? And I felt like he had that influence, you know? And he told me, dude, man, that's exactly... You know, he loves G-Rap, and Nas, you know, Nas had been out maybe the year before, or actually Nas already out for a few years at this point. So definitely influenced him. And, you know, it was cool to talk about just hip hop in general with these guys. And they're in France, I'm here in Montreal, like the different influences. And it was a really good time. And that track that Shuriken did with us, you know, that's one of the best. It's one of the best French rap verses, you know, I've heard. Like, when he dropped that, I was like, wow. And Shuriken hung out more like we did that in my apartment. At this point, I had an apartment downtown above my record store. And, you know, I remember Shuriken was making beats too. This one, he had his solo album out with Samurai.
Où je vis.
And so he was making beats too. So I remember me and him, like, he played me like 30 of his beats on that tape. And I was playing the beats, and we settled on this track to get him on. I just remember, like, in my apartment, small apartment, Shuriken on the couch, Diesel in the kitchen, OTMC on the floor, and the other, all of them writing the beats, just playing in the background. I was like, it was an impressive moment to just kind of see, like, man, we're chilling with I Am right now. It's crazy. And he's writing a verse for one of my tracks. Like, so that was great for even for them, like, even more for Diesel and OT, like, they came up, you know, in French rap, looking at I Am and Solar as like, these were the gods of French rap. And now you're writing a song with like your idol. It's like, you know, and I was telling, I was no pressure guys, but you got your idol right there. So make sure, make sure you come correct on this one. So, you know, it was good times. And then, Keratone gave us that remix on the MPC, brought his MPC, sat there for a day. I think the 2000, it was the 2000 at that time. I remember because Barnev had an MPC 2000. And in those days when we'd tour, we would all bring a machine with us and make beats on the road in the car. Okay. Like we'd plug in the cigarette jack, plug in a power bar, and we'd all connect our samplers, and everyone's just making beats. Barnev was making beats. So I remember he had the 2000, and I was debating on getting one back then. But, you know, I was cool with my ASR. But again, working with I Am, you know, huge for us. And turns out, like, a lot of these French rappers would come to Montreal and really love the city. And would come back regularly. Like Shuriken came back to Montreal lots of times. He may even have bought some property in Montreal. Like they were falling in love with the city. All these French rappers that would come.
And now when they come through, it's like 10,000 people who show up in the streets to watch them perform. So it's crazy the way that all turned around.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was really, you know, that era, like, think about now, our first album's done. There was a vibe in Montreal. It was like 97, I guess, right? Just hip-hop was just about to explode, like, in Montreal. It was, you could feel it in the air. And the other groups were coming too, right? You had Sans Pression, you had Mosaïen coming out. You had, you know, LMDS, Constellation, you know, so there was a lot of momentum in that year. Yeah, like, we just got in the door first. Like, the door was about to crack open. We just, you know, got there a couple months before. Like, everyone else I mentioned, like, we would see them before our album came out, you know, when we'd go play around the city. We'd be on the same stage as a lot of those people. So they were all getting ready too to come out. And what's good is some bigger labels started getting interest and you know, picking up groups and putting them out.
You got to work with a lot of different artists. Like you talked a bit earlier about working with La Gamique. You got that placement, right. But you worked with Yvonne Clévé. You guys did Serrano Fucked Up.
Yeah.
So like about that collab and maybe some other collabs that were happening at that time, you know?
Well, so at the time, like after the first album, I had a record store that I opened up, and one of my, you know, people working with me at the store was Dave One, A-Track's older brother. He used to order all the records from New York for us because, you know, he just knew a lot about, you know, what's coming up and stuff, and just was tuned in, right? So he used to order all the records for the store, So I'd see him all the time, but he also was in the studio with Sans Pression. He had a track on their album. So he was coming back to the store, telling me, yeah, I just came back from the studio. And at the time, Sans Pression's 12-inch was out. L'Etage Souterrain was out. And the video, you know, that's incredible song, man. Like, that video is just crazy. Like, I had to go back and see it the other day. And Yvon's featured in that video, right?
That video is insane, man. And
it's crazy.
I think Sans Pression said that it was one of the most played videos on Music Plus ever.
That's that video was such a classic, man. It's you know, you had, like I say, the scene was about to explode, and that really launched it, right? So Dave One was telling me about the album, man. That's an album I wish I would have had a song on, right? It just didn't work out that way, but he was telling me, you know, Yvon's album's coming next, and Yvon said, you know, he wanted to get you to do a track. So, you know, I kind of heard that Yvon was looking to do something with me, and Yvon was on that first single, and I was like, man, this guy Yvon's another guy coming out of blazing, you know, like,
yeah.
I knew Sans Pression. I'd seen Sans Pression a couple times before on stage. And again, when you saw them, you knew it was gonna be big. Like on stage, the presence, T-Kid and SP together, the presence they had on stage was really incredible. They could have a whole room, just like the vibe in the room changed when Sans Pression got on stage. Like, these guys, you know, we knew it was going to be big. And I knew Ray Ray too. I was talking to Ray Ray in those days. So Ray Ray's beats were phenomenal. You know, he produced that first 12 inch and a lot of their other tracks. You know, big
yeah,
shout out to Ray
crazy
Ray.
Work. Yeah, I think that was like a Ray Ray and Sans Pression collabo album. And then other people kind of came onto it. But I think that was their piece of work, you know.
Yeah, Ray Ray.
They did a lot of work at his house, I think, and yeah.
That's right. Yeah, Ray Ray had his setup, nice studio at his house. You know, I worked with Ray Ray later on with some other artists, but at the time, you know, it was Ray Ray's group, and you know, those are classic beats, classic songs. Ray Ray was definitely a beast on the production. So, you know, I was happy to hear about Yvon, you know, wanting to work with me, because I thought he was another MC that was going to do a lot of damage, man. Like, he came out, you know, his verse on that track was just, you know, insane, man. So I was like, let's do this, you know, and we connected. And don't forget, like, Cedric Morgan is the label that they're all on, right? So I knew Cedric.
Yeah.
Cedric reached out and said, yeah, you know, let's connect. Yvon wants to do some work. So I gave Yvon three beats at the time, only one of them really fit, and that's the track. Like, C'est Rendu Fucked Up, you know, it was you know, to this day it's probably one of my favorite beats, you know, that I, because I at that point I was, that's all like S950, and you know, I was really in my element, I find, at that point. And I was looking forward to doing a more rugged type of track, and that was, you know, perfect track, man. Like, the cuts, you know, I find the whole thing came together quite nicely. That was recorded by and mixed by Rod Shear, maybe, I think his last name is, forget his last name, but he mixed. One thing that was good about Mount Real and Cedric is he made sure Sans Pression and Yvon were in the best studios at the time. Yeah, they recorded at Piccolo Studio in the East End. And, it's one of the better studios, like Céline Dion recorded there and stuff. Like, and they got Rod, at least on this song I did with Yvon. And Rod's the kind of guy you could trust, you know, like to bring out the elements and make it sound right. So I was happy to do that, you know, a song like that, and have it mixed right and come out on vinyl. It was really, you know, it all came together nicely. And yeah, so that track to this day, like, is one of my favorites. And even it led to, actually, had a track I made for Sans Pression that was supposed to come out after that one. It was a Posse song with Yvon, Sans Pression, and Un Étrange. And big shout out to all those guys. You know, they definitely changed hip hop in those days. They were catalysts, you know, of making Montreal hip hop what it is today, really. So yeah, we had a track. It never came out. Like, it's too bad. Like, we went, we recorded it. I don't know what happened. T Kid was on the song too. It was like a Posse track. I think it was for a French compilation, but I don't know what happened. Never came out, but got to hang out with those guys a bit. And that was that, man. That was, they took off and did their thing, you know. Yvon Crevé had Dave One, you know, also producing on that album, the first videos. Yeah, man. It was good times, man. Good times.
Yeah, man. And so was that all at the same time as the second Dubmatique album was going on, or was
pretty much, yeah. So we may have already had just finished the Dubmatic album when I did the Yvon Crevé song. Another thing that happened around that time was I get a phone call from Cut Killer, and he's like, "Yo, Choice, I want to make a Canada mixtape." And I'm like, "I need a studio. I need you to help me out, get all the rappers together and stuff." So, you know, at the time I bumped into recently.
What a crazy honor.
Yeah. And I was like, of course, man, let's do this, you know? So he had a couple, he said, I'm coming in 3 weeks. So if you could set it up, find me a studio and this and that. And I'm like, yeah, man, for sure. So.
And for those who don't know who Cut Killer is, you've seen that, the movie La Haine, and there's that scene where a DJ sets up and he just starts cutting out of his window, out of his bedroom window. That's who Cut Killer is. He's basically like the, what would be like a Tony Touch or
Funk Master Flex,
you know, Tony Touch kind of thing, but in France. So, but yeah, sorry to cut that off, but I want the people to understand, like, you know, who Cut Killer is. And I mean, I'm not doing full justice to his history, but just to give the
Cut
scope,
Killer, you know? Too, in France, they have a radio station called Skyrock. It's like Hot 97 in New York. It's the equivalent in Paris. And Cut Killer's got, you know, the Cut Killer radio show. Like, he's probably the biggest DJ in French hip hop, even probably to this day. So it was a huge, huge honor. And we knew Cut Killer from a couple of occasions, and he was always cool with us. You know, we even did a promo, or we launched the La Haine movie in Montreal. We did, we brought Cut Killer down to do a show at Fufun Electric. And we, Dubmatic also got to open up. This was the early days, like way before we were released. So we did, had known him from way back. So it was good that he called back, and he knew Quebec was blowing up, and Montreal was blowing up, and he wanted to, you know, get a mixtape dedicated to it. So I'm like, man, that's great for our city. So, you know, at the time I bumped into Can Do. Can Do is a guy who was featured on one of the Shades tracks, the Pain Rent remix. Can Do, you know, he was a dope MC. I knew him from Shades. He was at the time managing Rain Men. And I bumped into him, and I even had given him a beat for Rain Men, where I was hoping to get a track on their next album. And we, you know, we had talked. He had a studio in Old Montreal that he was running, or it was his. I'm not sure what it was, but perfect for this tape. Like, it had like all the space you needed, had extra rooms and stuff. And so I called him and said, "Look, I got this project. I got to get about 50 MCs recorded in a weekend. You know, you want to help me out?" And so he was down. We used his studio. Big shout out to Can Do. Kandu had a video out back in those days in the early 90s too. Bright Lights, Big City. Yeah, like definitely need to
Oh,
look
from
into
Scales Empire.
Scales Empire. Yeah, that's Kandu.
Oh, great.
And
So that was on Rap Essentials Volume 1.
Was it?
That
Okay.
yeah, Beat
Yeah.
Factory put out Rap Essentials Volume 1, which is, you know, an insane, crazy
I didn't
one of
realize
the
he was
best
on Beat
Canadian
Factory. Yeah.
compilations. And
Yeah.
I always heard about Scales Empire being from Montreal and not knowing too much about that track, Bright Lights, Big City.
Yeah. Yeah.
So good
That's
to hear a little
Kandu.
more background about that, man. Thank you.
Yeah, and if you hear on Mind State, there's the Pay and Rent remix. You'll hear Kandu as a verse on that. He helped, produce that track with us too. So yeah, big shout out to Kandu. We use his studio. I also reached out. You know, I wanted to make sure the city was well represented, so I reached out to some people for help. I remember calling Selvo for to get some of the East End guys on this because. You know, I knew a lot of people. I didn't know everyone. So Selvo was a guy that I'd connected with earlier. Vulgaire and Selvo, like, you know, good peeps. So I called
Yeah,
them.
shout out to
Also,
Vulgaire, man. Shout out to Vulgaire.
yeah, Vulgaire for sure. You know, when I first met Vulgaire, like, he told me, you know what? I have every single Montreal rap freestyle ever happened on the radio in Montreal recorded. Like, this guy was like a historian back then. And I'm like, what? That's crazy. Like he told me he had everything. Like so these guys, I know these guys were really for the culture, you know.
Yeah.
And I like the LDP's out, man. I like their style. Like they were dope, man, as a group. So reached out to them to get, you know, their group and some of their people on. Reached out to Mount Real Records to get everyone from there on. Mosaic as well. Like I felt like I got everyone I could that
Yeah.
That I, you know, I let other people bring their extended family of MCs in, and then to really make it well raw, I got my peeps in there. And over a weekend, you know, Cut Killer showed up. You had all those MCs coming through. You know, there was no beef. There was no, you know, I don't know who was down with who, but I just had everyone come through. They would go through my crates, pick a song to rap over. Bring it in the other room,
okay.
And Cut Killer would line it up. They'd get in a booth, and we just kind of mass produced this tape and got everyone we could on it. And that was that.
That's interesting that they went through the crates and chose instrumentals
yeah.
themselves. It's like, okay, we're going to use this, but you guys pick what you're going to be on. It's like as if you had beats already lined up and you're like, you guys can figure out what you want to be on, but it's
well,
like, this is kind of.
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, because some people came with their own beats ready. But, it, you know, his tapes are always like on top of American beats or instrumentals,
yeah.
right? So it wasn't,
yeah.
You had to pick some instrumental. So, you know, I had a bunch lined up I knew people would want to be on so they could pick.
That's cool.
Put the
man.
Headphones
cool.
on. Yeah, it was a great. Great moment, I think, for everybody. And you know, it took so long to come out. Like now, it's on YouTube and stuff. But I remember at the time, like it took almost a year before I even heard about it. But so I'm glad it's out there and people can hear a bit of time capsule of what was going on at that time. You know?
Yeah, man, definitely,
yeah.
definitely. So yeah, so you did. You had D-Shade on the. On the second album
yep.
with L Winner.
Yep.
And you guys performed on Music Plus. So let's talk about that track a little bit.
Right, yeah. So L Winner for one, like Rabah, he's you know, good friend of the family. I met him through D Soul, but you know, he came here from Algeria and quickly climbed the ranks in the MC world and just coming out with bars and to the point where we wanted to put him on and get him on that track. And he then launched his group, Latitude Now. And they put their album out with, they were also part of the Shades family, Windmill Records, which was Fritz Mongil and a guy called Jonathan. They had Windmill Records. They did Mind State. They also put Latitude Now out. they were working with even with Chuck on a project called Soldiers of Fortune. So they were really investing into hip hop too in those days. So you know, that was good to work with Rabah. Rabah now is actually, I believe he's managing Enima the rapper. He has a label and management, and I believe he's his manager. He also went on to have a great acting career. And there's a movie called L'Ange de Goudron where he acted in. And you know, Rabah is a big icon of the Algerian community in Montreal, and so I just want to make sure people know that. Like, big shout out to Rabah. And D-Shade, you know, D-Shade, me and him, you know, friends for life. We're even, you know, working on some stuff now that hopefully we can get out there. But yeah, we're definitely cooking again these days, me and D-Shade. And yeah, so it was good to get the family together like that on a track. It was a fun track. D-Soul actually, on that album, D-Soul, you know, had helped find a couple samples. Like, that's one of his samples that I chopped up a bit. So he was getting getting into the production in those days.
So he got an ASRX.
He got an ASRX. And, that had a crisp sound to it. Like, D-Soul produced a guy called Most, who's also down with
M-O-S-T.
The crew.
M-O-S-T.
M-O-S-T, yeah. Big shout out to M-O-S-T. I did two songs on that album too. D-Soul did most of the work. So that was D-Soul's big production debut. The first single, Black Charism, I think it's called. Dope, man. It was, it was nice. Well done. And that was D-Soul getting into the production game on that one. I also did a project around those days with an MC called Chilan. It was Ill Mentals was the project.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that, man. So who is the Ill Mentals, or is that the name of the compilation? Like,
right,
it's kind of confusing when you just look it up on Discogs and there's not a lot of information out there. So
there's an MC who was in Montreal at the time. His name is Chilan, C-H-I-L-A-N, Chilan. He, I did a project with him earlier, a solo EP, and Shades was on it. Tactics was on it. You know, we knew him via the movie industry. His dad was a stunt coordinator on some movies, and Tactics and myself, Tactics mostly, was a stuntman. I did some stunt work too in those days, just on the side, and met his dad. His dad's like, my son raps, you guys want to check him out? So he kind of came under the fold of the family, the Shades and myself in those days, and we worked with them, and he quickly, you know, climbed the ranks of became a very good lyricist. And so we did an EP with him, but he came back couple years later and wanted to do this Ill Mentals project. So it's his project. And at the time he was, you know, hanging out with Chance One. There's another MC that was in Montreal in those days that was making a lot of noise. Excellent lyricist. So, you know, he came to me to produce a couple tracks. I know Dave One did a track on that project too with Mr. Len and I think Manchild. So he wanted to get his songs out and kind of showcase another element. I did a song with him and a rapper called D, who's a French female MC that was super dope in those days. So it was good. It was really underground type of project, and I had a great time working on that. So that, you know, that's pretty much the story of it. It's Chilan. You can look him up. It was his project. And he had a few of us contribute to it.
All right, man. And how was the, we were talking a lot about that second album, the Dubmatique album. How was the reception once you guys dropped the album? And like how you know, you guys dropped the first
right,
you had the first video come out, sorry. Like, so how was, you know, because we went on a couple of tangents, so how was the layout of that album afterwards?
So yeah, so the album, trying to think if we covered all the featurings on it. I think we did most of them. So we,
I
you
think
know,
the D Shade and L Winner was the last D one that we L Winner, spoken, you know, about. That,
yeah. So you know, the album came out, you know, we went the same kind of approach and put the video out and we toured again. Music Plus was always backing us. We had like a 1 hour show on Music Plus when the album came out, where we showcased some of the songs and did some interviews and stuff. You know, the album, like we pushed it the same way. The bottom line is the initial wave that we were riding was kind of not as strong this time, for whatever reason. The way I see it is, like, you know, a lot of our first album was a timing thing, and you know, a lot of people that weren't necessarily hip hop fans were part of our first album's fan base. And I felt like our second album was even more brought it back down to, you know, traditional hip hop. I felt like now was a good time for us to try to educate, or at least push, you know, other types of songs on people. A lot of the tracks, like I like a lot of the songs we had. They didn't do as well commercially, but I still like the work that we did. And you know, we realized, like, you know, we sold half as many records the second time out, right, than we did the first time. So I felt like there wasn't the kind of infrastructure I was hoping to see for not just us, for everyone coming out. Like at first I'm like, wow, everyone can touch this wide audience. You know, if all the other groups can too, like hip hop is just gonna get established and, you know, everyone can just get a piece of that pie, right? So I realized that, you know, it wasn't as strong the second time around. And you know, for me, it was like I'm a full-time hip-hop artist now. It's my career, like it's what I do for a living. And if I can't make my living in this market, you know, I had to kind of make a decision. It was clear to me that it wasn't at the level where we could make a proper living and be at that level. So I had to kind of decide, like at that point, you know, you have to decide, do you try to cater back to that initial fan base and make music for them? Or are you trying to push and build your, you know, your core foundation based on, you know, hip hop that you're proud of, you know? So the decision to like either keep pushing or make more commercial music was on in front of us as a group, you know? And I feel that at that point, we didn't really see eye to eye on which way we should go. And it was kind of clear, like there's, the momentum is not what it was. So you have a decision to make now, like, do you push through it? You know, to me, like it was always, there's a way to do it, but to solve that puzzle, you really gotta have a very, clear vision of how you're going to do it and all be on the same page, right? So I thought like we could have taken it to another level, but we were not seeing eye to eye on some of the, you know, the ideas musically and stuff. So it was a challenge at that point, you know, after the second album didn't do as well, you know, we came back to the drawing board. What do we do now? And we just, it was tough for us to figure that out. And I was like, I realized at that point that it wasn't going to be what I thought it could be. And so I made the decision to leave it at two albums and not try to, you know, keep pushing at the time. And also, you know, there are aspects of the industry that I really didn't like the whole time. you know, a lot of the financial side of it. You know, the classic stories, you know, when you get to that level, a lot of people are making money off of what you're doing, and it's not really equitable for artists. So it was that, like, do I want to push so hard to, you know, put out more music that's just gonna, you know, make other people money and not us? Like, so at that point I realized, like, I couldn't really look to hip-hop as a career, and I needed to get myself in a situation where I'm not depending on hip-hop to pay my bills, or because it's clouding my ability to be creative. And I had to, you know, I had to drop out of the scene. And I, you know, I kept working for a while after Dubmatic on a couple projects here and there, just for fun. And, you know, hip hop started changing too. It was the 2000s. The sound of hip hop was changing.
Yeah, everything was changing at that time.
You know, the desire to, you know, be part of that was starting to fade for me. So, you know, I made the call to leave the group. It was a tough decision. They made the decision to continue and put a few more albums out without me. But for me, it was, you know, it was time to take a break and reassess things. And
how did guys take that?
At first, it you know, wasn't what they wanted to hear, but they knew, like, they could see my attitude for a while was kind of wasn't the same. Like, I didn't have that energy to keep pushing. And, you know, even on their end, like, we had a lot of disappointing aspects, not really the musical side, but more like the business side. So it was tough. It was tough to keep that enthusiasm, even all three of us. We were having a hard time putting songs together, seeing eye to eye on, you know, ideas and direction, you know, so we lost that, we lost a bit of that initial connection that we had in the early days, and it was just a fact. So instead of pushing through it and, you know, struggling to continue something that, you know, I did, my heart wasn't in, I had to pull out. And, you know, over time they got it. And, you know, they saw that I wasn't joking. Like, I literally pulled out of the scene completely for a while. And
what was that like for you, man? Like, a scene that you'd been part of since the early 80s. Like, you know, we've been talking about this. What was that like? Like, 20 years, you're into this thing, and then now you gotta step back from your passion. From, I mean, that's your circle of friends at the same time, right? Like,
it was, but, you know, at the same time, I was a little burnt out, man. Like, you know, I'd been a club DJ the whole time. So years of playing in the clubs, years of that environment, I kind of got, you know, a little tired and wanted to take a break. And at first I was like, let me just take a break for a while and see what happens. And I feel like just hip hop itself didn't motivate me like it used to. And it was harder for me to find a lane in hip hop that really interested me for several years, until actually just a few years back, I'm starting to get that flame back, because, you know, I feel there's a movement, a renaissance movement in hip hop now, that there's a type of hip hop that I can relate to that's coming back into, you know, into play. That is motivating me again now to, you know, get back into production. But for all those years, like, I just, the flame didn't spark. Like, it was, I'd listen to hip hop, be harder for me to find songs I like. You know, back in the 90s, I could get a Crate of Records from my record pool and spend, like, you know, 2 weeks going through nothing but dope tracks. Like, it was a different time. It was, for me, it was like a golden era that was kind of fading. And the motivation wasn't there, you know. I couldn't fake it, you know. And I told these guys straight up, like, I'm not feeling it, man. I'm not gonna back out. And that was that. They continued, we reconnected a few years later, did a show here and there. I'm scratching on one of their songs and one of the next albums they did. I still, there's nothing I regret from those days. We did amazing things as a group. We had, moments together that, three of us will never forget. And that was that. I try to only remember the good parts,
Yeah, for sure. A lot of highs, a lot of lows, but those highs are great.
It's the highs, the highs
can't be taken away, man.
That's right. Like that's all I really want to focus on is the good times we had, and wish them all the best. And we kept in touch, and they're still doing their thing as Dubmatic, and we had great times together.
Yeah, man. And so we talked about Science Records for a bit. How did that, how was the, when did that shut down? And let's talk about the door that opened for Move Audio.
So I opened Science Records after the first album with Willow and another childhood friend of mine, this guy called Joel Clement. We opened up Science Records. I always wanted my own record store. It was like only indie hip hop or only hip hop 12-inch vinyl or actually vinyls only type of store. And it was good for me because, a lot of people came through there. I got to stay in touch with a lot of people in the scene that way. At one point, a guy I used to get my equipment from and rent things from, he worked at Etal Melody, this guy called Kano. He was like saying he wanted to start up a business for, electronic equipment, DJ equipment. And I'm like, I have my store. Why don't you come open up in the back of the store? We got space. Just start that way. And it helped get you started, right? And he was like, okay. And we brainstormed the name and stuff. Willow was also a partner on that. So we helped Kano get set up with Moog Audio in the back of the store. And we were hanging out together for a good year that way, like records on one side, equipment in the back. And then Moog really started picking up speed. Everyone was coming through to get their rent, their DJ gear and all that stuff. So, it expanded from that point. Then we actually moved to Saint Laurent and Saint Dominique, right on the corner. It was a little store. DNA Records was there, owned by Tiga, who's a big techno DJ in Montreal. He had his techno record store, or electronic music record store. So we kind of merged with him, and Moog Audio was, I think, upstairs and we were downstairs, or vice versa. So we did that for a while, and then Moog actually got too big for that kind of space and got its own spot on Saint Laurent. That was at Kano. Had his full-fledged store. At that point, I was no longer involved. I just helped them get started. But it was, it was a good move, definitely. The city needed that. We used to have like DJ classes in there and stuff, teaching people how to scratch and stuff. So it was cool.
The city still needs it, man. I'm glad that Moog Audio is still there, and all the, not just them, but everybody who does what they do. It's very necessary to keep that musical environment in Montreal and keep, all the producers and everybody who's doing music, able to do what they do. So, yeah, man, we talked about so much stuff. Like, before we go, I just wanted to quickly name drop the movie placements that I want to mention this because it was crazy. You sent me a Hulk Hogan movie called The Ultimate Weapon.
Yeah,
that's the name of the movie, right?
Yeah.
So you and Mr. Len had a movie placement in that. You guys, your track had a placement in that movie at about, I don't know, 30 minutes or so.
Right.
And then there was another movie that you had sent me, The Art of War with Wesley Snipes.
With the
had
Shades.
A scene with, with the Shades track, the Eye Out. So yeah, talk about that, man, for a quick moment before we get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, interesting story, the Hulk Hogan movie. So this goes all the way back to when I first met KC at LMNOP at Rap Cité. In those days, he was working on an EP and wanted me to make some beats for him. And he had a person, kind of executive producer for his project, a man by the name of Marty Simons. And KC will remember this. And Marty Simons at the time, like I made a few beats for KC, and we never, I don't know what happened. It never really came out. But me and KC were working together, and this guy, Marty Simons, is actually, his career was in movie scoring. So he would score a lot of the movies that come to Montreal, the film. He would do the soundtrack and the musical scoring. So I met him at that time through KC. And then he told me back then, you know, Choice, if you come up in the music, there's a whole career in movies that, you know, you might be interested in. It worked well for me. Like he was an artist before. I think he even worked with some big rock bands and stuff and went into the film business. So years later, I think a couple of years later, I get a phone call one day and, hey, Choice, it's Marty Simons. I'm working on this Hulk Hogan movie. I need a dance hall track. Do you think you could put something together for me? I need it by tomorrow morning. And I'm like, yeah, I can do that for you. And so called up Mr. Len, said, Len, man, this is what we got to do. Are you game? And he's like, yeah, man, let's do it. He came through. We stayed up all night. We put a track together. We put it on a DAT tape and Purolator sent it, you know, via Purolator to Marty Simons, and it made it into the movie. It was just like that, out of nowhere. And, you know, me and Len still to this day, we laugh about that. Like, we pulled that thing off like last minute and just got it in there. So, yeah, it was a fun little, unexpected, benefit from just meeting someone a couple of years before. You never know where that can lead. And the Shades
come in. Sometimes your skills just come in handy. Like, well, you're able to put together a track in less than 24 hours
when you need to.
When
you feel like sometimes you get lazy, but when you really need to, you'll put that track together. Yeah. Now Len came through, man. It was a dope song too. Like, I don't think we can release it because it was signed over possibly to their company, but it could have almost come out as a release. Like, but it fit that scene. Like, if you see the scene, it fits right in there. And, he knew he couldn't get anyone, in his roster to sound like that. And so, yeah, he came to the right people.
Yeah, man.
And the Shades song, I'm not sure. Shades, yeah, I'm not sure how they got that placement. And to me, I was surprised. Like Wesley Snipes.
Because Art of War, I think, was kind of produced, executive produced in Quebec or something. Like some sort of.
Usually, that's the connection. A lot of movies
kind of shoot link or something like that.
Yeah, a lot of movies shoot in Quebec, and then you can end up getting a placement that way. So that's probably how that went down.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Anything you want to mention before we get out? One last thing. I know we talked about the videos on your YouTube channel. So please, people, go to DJ Choice on YouTube. And you're going to see, like we talked about it before, this 26-minute episode of Rap Cité. But what I didn't realize that we were talking about last night is like everybody's in this video. It's not just KCLMNOP and you. All of us, I'm chilling there with Shogun. Shogun, he's like, is that D-Shade? Is that Revolution? So D-Shade and Revolution are to your left. And you said to D-Shade's On the other side of D-Shade is
D-Trace. D-Trace from Zero Tolerance, yeah.
And then you got some dancers at the West Island crew who's in front of you, and
that's right.
Barnev is the one right there in the green suit holding an EPMD crossover 12-inch.
That's how far we go back, man. Yeah.
That's crazy, man. That's crazy.
Yeah. And that's only one of the shows. Like I said, there were a lot more. Like if people upload them, you'll probably see a lot of other people that came through that show, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for me now, just to wrap it up, you know, I've been getting back into production, you know, just taking my time, working with a couple people. You know, I always felt me and Yvonne had more to do together, so I got a chance to do a couple tracks with his new EP that's coming out in a couple weeks, or it may already be out by the time you're listening to this. He has an EP called Grand Cru coming out. I got two tracks with Yvonne on that. Working with D-Shade. Me and D-Shade are working on some stuff. Hopefully you'll be hearing soon. And who knows what's next? Like it's, you know, I'm liking, you know, making beats again and having fun. And that's really what it's all about. So who knows where it's going
to
lead.
It's good to hear you say that, man. Yeah. It's good to hear you say that. Like we talked about the highs and lows and if you're in that zone where you're starting to feel that hunger again, like that's where it's supposed to be, you know?
Yeah, man, that's what I lost. Now I feel like I have that back, and you know, let's see how it goes. And, you know, big shout out to you and Shogun and your projects. You know,
thank you.
I'm glad I got to discover that, because you know, till this time I hadn't really known that you guys were working on that stuff. So, good luck with that, and all the best.
Oh, one thing I forgot to talk about, man, was actually the CKUT,
hitting switches
history, hitting switches.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was a one-year run, hitting switches. We gave it to Orion when we quit. We gave it to Orion. He changed his name to Off the Hook. So it was Orion and this guy, Pat Reck. They took it over. But it was me, Willow, and D-Shade. You know, and you know, 4 to 7 a.m. on Sunday nights, I just couldn't keep it up. That, you know, that's really all it is. It's a one-year thing. You know, I gave you the intro there, but you know, we had fun. I had a bunch of shout outs made. I had like Buckshot, I had DJ Red Alert, I had what else did we get? Guru saying shout outs for the show. I might put those up somewhere on SoundCloud, like all the, because Willow went to like one of those big hip hop seminars one year and recorded everyone. Beat Nuts,
everybody,
all kinds of shots. You must have a ton of them too by now. Like, big names.
I haven't focused too much on that, but like CKUT has tons that they, you know, they share with us. But like, I haven't. I always forget to do that stuff when I meet artists and stuff. I'll do it. Interviews, and then I'll just forget about like getting
you need
drops from them.
You need a guy that is doing that. Like, that's why Willow wasn't really, you know, a creative type or, you know, on the show, but he would do that kind of stuff for his promo and stuff. So
yeah, man.
And DJ, thanks Chores, for having
man.
Me.
Thank
man.
You so much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, thanks for telling your story, man. Like 4 hours of interviews, and it's just like so appreciative of you telling your story, which is the story of Montreal hip hop, you know, a big piece of it. So thank you for that, man. Much appreciated.
Thank you, man. My pleasure.
Le mic comme pour reprendre de l'oxygène, aucune place pour la veine. Les gladiateurs sont perpétuellement lâchés dans l'arène. Personne se gêne pour frapper sans retenue. Contenu bien entendu que le plus fort est celui qui tue. Livré au système sans autre choix que le combat. Malgré les rêves brisés, certains persévèrent et gardent la foi. Par contre, d'autres frères désespèrent. Ils ont étudié tant d'années et côtoient à nouveau la misère. Trop de décrochage en bas âge, le taf manque au paysage. Les étudiants perdent espoir, mauvais présage, mirage. Quand chacun va qu'à ses occupations, la pression demeure constante malgré toutes les bonnes intentions. J'écris donc je pense donc j'avance. Je suis le seul à l'attaque, maître de la défense. Les médias retransmettent tant de données dans le désordre. Mieux vaut lire entre les lignes et ne pas suivre la la horde. Ordinaire comme des parents aiment leurs fils, comme les taxes augmentent chaque année et comme diminuent les services. Vision pessimiste d'un avenir matériel où les erreurs antérieures laissent malheureusement de graves séquelles.
La vie est un combat, j'enfile mes gants chaque matin.
Je construis mes lendemains à coups de poing.
J'évite les surages, je reste malin.
Je sais que je dois gagner mon pain.
C'est pas l'histoire sans fin.
Rien n'est vain,
mes jours seront sereins.
La vie est un combat, j'enfile mes gants chaque matin.
Je construis mes lendemains à coups de poing.
J'évite les surins, je reste malin.
Je sais que je dois gagner mon pain.
C'est pas l'histoire sans fin.
Rien n'est vain,
mes jours seront sereins.
Je regarde ma boule, le cristal, nada. Je frotte mais je vois rien, nada. Beaucoup connaissent pas leur présent, leur parle pas du futur, les gars. S'use le froc en vrac, scotché sur un muret. Ça troque du hache pour du cash en rêvant d'un avenir sans mur en muret. L'honneur va s'en sortir, mais ce sera duré. On prend l'argent sur où on peut en espérant que ça va durer. Pas question d'endurer les injures. Les jeunes jurent devant juré. T'inquiète, mon avenir, je l'assure. Moi, c'est juré. À coup de sueur, de malheur, à coup de cœur, de pleurs lâchés, d'accroche, crash fait, mais sortirai tout ça de mes poches. C'est moche, les poivrons le cherchent au boulot ou au bistrot. Comme quoi, l'espoir, ça mène très bas ou très haut. À toi de voir Mino, poste à miser. Fais ton choix, la foi ou la croix. Lâche prise si t'as les foies, y'a des sans loi. Face à toi, croise tes doigts autour, c'est la merde. Soit l'avenir est juste après, vis juste. Et si la poisse te sort les dents, fais lui péter. Sois ce que tu veux, pas ce qu'ils veulent que tu sois. Sinon, qu'est-ce que tu feras quand ils te laisseront tomber? T'auras plus de toi et l'air de quoi? Pas de leçon, y'a trop de pêcheurs à l'horizon. Surtout, mort pas à l'hameçon où t'es mort. Ton avenir, c'est toi, garçon. La vie est un combat, j'enfile mes gants chaque matin.
Je construis mes lendemains à coups de poing.
J'évite les surins, je reste malin.
Je sais que je dois gagner mon pain.
C'est pas l'histoire sans fin.
Rien n'est vain,
mes jours seront sereins.
Ouais, la vie est un combat, j'enfile mes gants chaque matin.
Je construis mes lendemains à coups de poing.
J'évite les surins, je reste malin.
Je sais que je dois gagner mon pain.
C'est pas l'histoire sans fin.
Rien n'est vain,
mes jours seront sereins.
De l'avenir, si le pire est à venir, faut-il fuir, s'endurcir ou garder le sourire? Autant d'opinions que d'avenir sans solution, avec un point d'interrogation en suspension. Seuls au monde, les plus malheureux succombent avec leurs péchés, leurs dettes qui sur leur tête leur tombent. Chaque minute, chaque seconde compte. Vers l'an 2000, en fin de compte, faisons le décompte. Jalousie et discrimination, tissés de friction, font que nous évoluons à reculons. Les plus démunis par d'illusions en pâtiront. Percés par des nouveaux, promettons traités comme des moutons. Marche ou crève, la crainte de la débâcle sur toutes les lèvres. La hantise de la crise fait monter la fièvre. Ce qui a été n'est plus, c'est là qu'on réalise que sur un siège éjectable, on a tous posé notre cul.
La vie est un combat, j'enfile mes gants chaque matin.
Je construis mes lendemains à coups de poing.
J'évite les surins, je reste malin.
Je sais que je dois gagner mon pain.
C'est pas l'histoire sans fin.
Rien n'est vain,
mes jours seront sereins.
Ouais, la vie est un combat, j'enfile mes gants chaque matin.
Je construis mes lendemains à coups de poing.
J'évite les surins, je reste malin.
Je sais que je dois gagner mon pain.
C'est pas l'histoire sans fin.
Rien n'est vain,
mes jours seront sereins. Hélas, qui s'abreuve toujours de l'inconscience humaine pour parvenir à ses fins. Je nourris du vice, exploite les faiblesses au moindre recoin. Sous diverses formes, il manipule les hommes, subdivise à sa guise, épaulé par la bêtise, engendré par ses soifs de pouvoir qui siègent en chacun. Tout le monde veut le contrôle, résultat de nombreux défunts. Factures salées, espoir écorché. Certains devraient faire preuve, d'après moi, d'un peu plus de lucidité. Diriger reste une lourde responsabilité, mais la priorité devrait toujours être à l'égalité.
Chaque jour que je fais, je me demande bien pourquoi les hommes entre eux ne cessent-ils pas de se combattre comme chien et chat. Alors qu'une autre tombe fleurira, d'autres bombes tomberont, de nombreuses familles consternées pleureront leur rejeton. Résolument défenseur d'une nation qui au fond investira beaucoup plus de pognon, disons, dans l'armement que dans l'éducation. Chaque jour que je fais, je me demande n'ont-ils pas perdu la raison. Soit de liberté et besoin surtout de sensations, et non pas qu'on nous presse en presse face à l'adversité. Pour éviter de lever mon glaive, ma voix se lève pour que celle-ci t'apaise. Reste bien à l'aise. Watch out, watch out.
They babble and they never know themselves till they walk against the wall.
The Community Media Advocacy Center is hosting a series of consultative events titled Building an Anti-Racism Strategy for Canadian Broadcasting. Made possible with support from the Anti-Racism Action Program at Canadian Heritage, these important and timely events will help confront barriers experienced by Black, Indigenous, and people of color in the media.
Events will be hosted in Montreal, Vancouver, Halifax, Calgary, and Winnipeg, culminating in a national conference to be held at Carleton University in Ottawa. These events will host presentations and open forums to develop an anti-racism strategy that will reduce barriers to participation in media and broadcasting policymaking for racialized Canadians.
Register for free to join the event in person at UQAM on Saturday, April the 30th. Presentations start at 10 a.m.
Complete details are online at www.antiracism.media.
This is a CKT co-presentation.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
Living with the virus means remaining cautious. We must continue wearing a mask and washing our hands. At the first sign of symptoms, it's crucial to self-isolate and get tested. Those who have COVID-19 must respect the isolation period, since they can remain contagious for at least 10 days. Those most at risk for developing complications, either because of their age or because they're immunocompromised, must be especially careful. And for even better protection, get vaccinated. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Off the Hour, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are 6 days into the month of May. We are broadcasting from unceded Mohawk and Anishinaabe territory. You're tuned into The Avalanche, a special presentation of CKUT's Community News Department. The Avalanche seeks to cover issues affecting those with disabilities. I'm your host, Zoe. On today's show, an interview with disability rights advocate Jody Negley on how the pandemic can be used to improve